And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm still Uncle Dennis, and there's plenty more information coming up, so please keep that pencil and recycled paper handy. This week's commentary is actually not as much of a commentary as it is an exposé. The FBI's current campaign against activism in Indiana, the case of Frank Ambrose, and this is written by the Bloomington Defense Committee. Is Frank Ambrose. Frank Ambrose is a community activist from Bloomington, Indiana. He is involved in several mainstream and some radical groups such as Earth First, the Industrial Workers of the World, Speak Out for Animals, and the American Lands Alliance. He is employed by the latter Forest Protection Organization and has been one of the most foremost forest activists in the Midwest. Outside his employment, he has shown consistent support for people's struggles to rid themselves of those who wish to exploit them and the environment they depend on. This commitment has made him a prime target in the government's attempts to harass the activist community into silence. He was arrested on January 25th of 2001 and is being charged with tree spiking in relationship to an incident in a local state forest that was claimed by the Earth Liberation Front. Tree spiking is a Class D felony, which carries a sentence up to 3 years in prison and up to a $10,000 fine. This is the first arrest in the United States in relationship to an Earth Liberation Front action. The Earth Liberation Front has caused over $37 million in damages to businesses profiting from the destruction of the environment. The harassment of Frank and his family began late last February when FBI and ATF agents began visiting him and his friends in an attempt to question them about a recent ELF action that had occurred in Bloomington, Indiana. It continued in July when the FBI and state conservation officers raided Frank and Marie Mason's, that's his wife, house, looking for implements of tree spiking. What they came away with was loads of organizational literature, address books, family photo albums, and a few miscellaneous household items like spray paint and a pocket knife. Authorities told them at this time that they would find someone who would rat on Frank and come back with an arrest warrant. Now, 6 months later, the FBI and state conservation officers are attempting to frame Frank for the tree spiking incident. They cite circumstantial evidence as the reason for their accusation. They are making Frank and others who take confrontational but legal approaches to stop the madness defend themselves in courts for their views. Frank has done nothing more than be vocal and be willing to put his body on the line to stop the logging program. And that is, he was part of a takeover of a state forest office during a timber bid last year. It is believed that the authorities are entering into the legal arena with a low pitch to make it more likely to get a conviction. With a conviction, they would have to name a name to place with the elusive Earth Liberation Front, and then they might move to add federal anti-terrorism charges or try to pin the other ELF actions in the Bloomington area on him. It is very important that we all fight this battle in every way possible. Frank needs to have a good criminal defense to beat the charges. The activist community needs to stand united and show the authorities we will not be scared into silence. We need to increase the number of effective campaigns that have made the money interests take notice in the first place. This is a great chance to stand up and show those who view life as a commodity to exploit that we are not going away no matter what they do to us. We are going to win this battle. What's the role of the FBI? The FBI's primary and founding purpose is to disrupt and destroy activist movements, having been formed to destroy the industrial workers of the world in the early part of the last century. They continue to infiltrate and break apart many different social movements that have been threatened the established power structure through a program called Counterintelligence Program, or COINTELPRO. These movements and groups include the American Indian Movement, the Black Panthers, the Puerto Rican Independence Movement, and Earth First. They usually use the pretext of some crime that is committed that has a political nature to it to begin to investigate social movements. Many times there is no crime, or FBI committed the crime themselves to gain public support for their investigation. In every movement they have investigated, they have gone to all lengths to silence the activists involved. Many Black Panthers and AIM movement members were jailed on manufactured evidence or even executed. The Earth Firsters have been bombed and framed by FBI infiltrators. Fred Hampton is a Black Panther who was assassinated by the FBI, and the MOVE organization was bombed and burned by the government, and Leonard Peltier sits in jail today based on FBI lies. These incidents are well documented in other sources, such as War at Home by Brian Glick. Frank's arrest is just a part of the FBI's modern-day witch hunt to destroy the growing movement against globalization and the Earth's destruction. They see the movement that has been growing exponentially since the WTO meeting disruptions in Seattle as a significant threat to the existing power structure. This arrest is larger than just a disruption of the Bloomington community. The FBI is also working with other law enforcement agencies across the country to use trumped-up charges and threats of significant jail time against activists to make people afraid to join the movement. They want the movement to stop. The FBI is acting as the armed mercenary of the corporate world order, protecting their right to destroy all that is living. It is up to everyone out there to resist their efforts and push forwards. What can you do? You need to continue with the work you've been doing. We must take direct action to confront and prevent the corporations from continuing down their current path of destruction. Political trials and criminal defense takes considerable money. Please donate what you can to help pay the legal fees of the trial. The costs of Frank's trial are estimated to amount to several thousands of dollars. All money raised will be used in Frank's defense, not to keep the lawyers working. It is important that he mount a good defense to beat the charges and avoid further federal charges. Please send donations to Bloomington Defense Committee, P.O. Box 3503, Bloomington, Indiana, 47402. That's Bloomington Defense Committee, P.O. Box 3503, Bloomington, Indiana, 47402. And you can call the court at 812-349-2534. That's 812-349-2534. And tell them to drop charges against Frank. Please be polite and think of what you say, as these messages will certainly be noted in the trial. Write a letter to the editor of your local paper explaining how the government is attempting to stifle protest and break apart communities that care about the Earth. Please remember that these letters may show up in the trial, too, so think about what you say. Sign up for the email phone alert list. Write to defensecommittee@yahoo.com. That's defensecommittee, all one word, @yahoo.com. Or call 812-333-0173. And on a little lighter note here, if you're looking for Casey Neal, he's going to be in Vancouver, British Columbia at the Folk Alliance Conference, February 15th through 17th. That's the Vancouver, British Columbia Folk Alliance. Let's see, probably East-West Showcase, 5 p.m. on Friday, or the Elderly Showcase, 11 p.m. on Friday. And then Gorilla Showcases, somewhere around there. On February 24th, you can find Casey Neal in Tacoma, Washington, at the Wintergrass Festival. All weekend at the Tacoma Sheraton with all kinds of great folks. So check out the Wintergrass Festival in Tacoma, Washington, February 24th, if you're looking for Casey Neal. Also, if you're looking for Robert Hoyt, he's on the road. February 13th, he'll be in Prescott, Arizona at the Organic Alley Cafe of Prescott College. That's at 8 p.m. On the 16th, in Berkeley, California at a potluck, and then music at the Grassroots House, 2022 Blake Street. That's a half block west of Shattuck in Berkeley. And, of course, Saturday, February 17th in Santa Cruz at 8 p.m. at the Poet and Patriot at 320 Cedar Street. The 18th of February in Fort Bragg, California at the Headlands Coffee House at 7 p.m. And in Ukiah, California on the 21st at the Ukiah Brewing Company at 8:30. February 22nd in Willits, California at the Shaughnessy Pub at 7 p.m. Moving into news, Brazil says it will not let the Amazon become a sanctuary. Brazil slammed a study warning of the destruction of at least a quarter of the Amazon due to development, saying the world's largest rainforest cannot be turned into an untouchable sanctuary. The country's science and technology ministry said a report on destruction of the Amazon published in the U.S. journal Science on January 19th was based on unreliable facts and ecological futurology, using unfounded projections on deforestation that are challenged by Brazil's government. Quote, there is a clear perception by the government that we cannot treat the Amazon as an untouchable sanctuary, said a ministry spokesman defending development. There are 20 million Brazilians living there. Sometimes considered the lungs of the earth due to the vast amounts of oxygen produced there, the Amazon loses an area equivalent to the size of Rhode Island each year to loggers and other forms of destruction. is home up to 30% of the world's animal and plant life and 7 times the size of France. Developing the Amazon has always been a controversial issue in Brazil because of the desire to build up the poor northern part of the country while balancing environmentalist concerns about keeping the Amazon intact. The Science article projected that a development plan by the Brazilian government involving $40 billion of investment over 7 years could result in the destruction of at least a quarter of the forest by 2020. I don't see how any reasonable person could dismiss our findings, said William Lawrence of the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute, adding the comments were coming from a single Brazilian ministry, not the government per se, but the ministry said Lawrence's work does not reflect the technical consensus at these institutions. And the Brazilian embassy in Washington issued a statement saying some information in the article was, quote, the object of considerable controversy among the scientific community. The projection by Dr. Lawrence does not seem to have a sound basis since it takes into account the experience of the last 25 years when none of the different policies to stop deforestation now adopted were in place, the embassy said. The article said if the project's plans to build more roads in the Amazon become a reality and resulted in the expected increase in activities like mining and farming, the forest could be greatly threatened. The optimistic scenario predicted that 28% of the Amazon would be destroyed or heavily damaged, while the pessimistic scenario forecast 42% destruction. The ministry said the absolute worst-case scenario that would see only 25% of the total Amazon destroyed by 2020. And I want to thank Axel Bug of the Reuters News Service for that story. And don't you think it's time to flick the solar switch? Photovoltaic panels on rooftops could do the job of a power plant. This story by Daniel Press of the San Jose Mercury News. Why should Californians build new power plants in the 21st century? Well, that's the question nagging me as we all face power shortages. High electricity bills are a costly state bailout program for the utilities. We've been told by President Bush and many others that we're in an energy crisis and the regulators relax environmental standards or open up federal lands to gas and oil exploration. New power plants cost hundreds of millions of dollars and produce hundreds of tons of pollutants. A more innovative and, in the end, less costly way to generate all that power is to install photovoltaic panels on commercial, residential, and industrial rooftops throughout California, or any other place for that matter. If 100,000 rooftops installed 6-kilowatt systems over the next decade, the state would generate the same amount of daytime energy as a wasteful, polluting power plant. That would take a lot less time. Sure, it would initially cost 4 or 5 times more to buy and install those panels than to build a conventional power plant, but solar systems make healthy profits within 10 years at today's electricity rates. Post-installation operating and maintenance costs would be minuscule. There are no moving parts in solar voltaic systems, and today's technology is far cheaper, more robust, and more efficient than even a decade ago. Photovoltaic panel manufacturers are so confident of their products that they warranty them for 20 to 25 years. Does this sound like pie in the sky? Not if you're the Sacramento Municipal Utility District. That district has already implemented a similar effort dubbed the PV Pioneers Program, in which the utility pays to put solar panels on residential and commercial rooftops. Each year, as this new program grows, per-watt installation costs come down, and imagine the cost reductions if 100,000 systems were installed in one region. Back in 1975, the state legislature required that all new houses be built with insulation. Despite the obvious energy savings, the construction industry howled, claiming that hundreds of thousands of Californians would be priced out of a new home by the new requirement. Now we can't imagine wasting that much energy just to save a few bucks on fiberglass. What if new homes and offices were required to offset their electricity demands with photovoltaic tiles or panels? In a few years, we could be world leaders in solar technology manufacturing, would enjoy plentiful, clean electric power, and would create a new skilled labor force in solar installation and maintenance. And I just want to add in a separate article I read just the other day, there's a company forming a new solar photovoltaic plant down in Los Angeles. I wonder why. A final benefit of rooftop solar is how it involves communities. We all hear about global warming, the growing need for more energy sources, and deteriorating air quality, but what can the average citizen do? We can change our transportation habits only with great personal difficulty given the jobs housing imbalance in so many parts of the state. Becoming a supplier of clean, renewable power doesn't occur to most people because of the large initial costs. But with local vision and leadership, our rooftops could become the power stations of the future, and then we would become integral contributors to sustainable development. Rooftop solar energy isn't a solution to the state's immediate energy problems, but it's where we need to go if we want to meet the state's growing energy needs without gouging consumers or ruining the air we breathe. And we want to thank Daniel Press for this article. He's an associate professor of environmental studies at UC Santa Cruz. From Russia, we read that capital demands are endangering Russian forests. 9 years ago, the Soviet Union collapsed, and as we see in this week's Look at Our Planet, so did many environmental protections. Conservationists are especially worried about Russia's pristine forests. Thousands of miles from Moscow in Siberia and Russia's Far East, the wild forests of the Taiga are so inaccessible, only helicopters can penetrate many vast areas. And from the air, it's not hard to find mounting evidence of an emerging crisis, what some describe as the uncontrolled plundering of timber, minerals, oil, and gas. This is truly one of the last bastions of wild nature. To lose that would be a tragedy to the entire planet, said David Gordon of the Pacific Environment and Resource Center. The Taiga seems endless, twice the size of the Amazon rainforest. More than a quarter of all the planet's forests are found in critical habitat for a vast diversity of life and strategic store of carbon, playing a role scientists say is crucial in regulating global climate. In the Soviet system, the Taiga was exploited for natural resources by state enterprises under the heavy hand of control from Moscow. After that system collapsed, some multinational corporations tried to pick up the pieces of resource industries there, but most of those deals failed, reportedly because of corruption and local bureaucracy. The post-Soviet scramble for the riches of Russia's Far East has now turned into a steady drive by Russian interests, sometimes with international partners, to penetrate this vast region with roads and infrastructure to open it up and exploit it. Well-connected companies are securing major timber and mining concessions from regional governments, closing deals conservationists describe as fire sales at bargain prices. Quote, the regional governments of Siberia and the Russian Far East are really hungry for cash. They want quick investment, they want quick, and unfortunately they're thinking first and foremost about selling their natural resources for quick cash rather than investing in the long-term future of their regions, according to Gordon. Critics say Russia's Far East is fast becoming a natural resource colony for China, Japan, and South Korea, an economy based on raw exports and generating few benefits for the local people. They warn the situation is now even worse since Russian President Vladimir Putin abolished the State Committee for the Environment and the Federal Forest Service. Conservation activists like TV personality Vasily Sulkin believe the Russian Taiga is in serious danger. He says he's frightened by the thought of its natural resources going into private hands at a time when government control and oversight has been weakened, a time many believe could be just the beginning of a massive ransacking of the Russian Taiga. And we want to thank Gary Straker of CNN for that story. Snowmobile ORV news here. Snowmobile project stopped in response to an appeal by Wildlaw and the Superior Wilderness Action Network. The Forest Service has dropped their proposal to relocate the Lost Girl snowmobile trail that would have required bulldozing at least a half a mile of forest. If you'd like more information about this, you can contact Lee at Wildlaw's Northwoods office, www.wildlaw.org is their webpage. Sorry, I don't have any information about Lee, but I got the webpage, www.wildlaw.org. Sometimes these articles are a little weird. And the second one is, court affirms closed unless designated open. In a June 2000 decision by the Sixth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals, has affirmed the findings of a lower court that the U.S. Forest Service has full legal authority to adopt a closed unless designated open policy for managing off-road vehicles, which includes snowmobile routes and areas. The decision in REETZ, R-E-E-T-Z, versus the United States, based on Executive Orders 11-644 and 11-989, use of off-road vehicles on public land, shows the United States Forest Service and all federal management agencies have a clear authority to adopt a closed unless designated open policy for off-road vehicle use. This decision plainly undermines false claims peddled by the ORV industry and swallowed by the Bureau of Land Management and some in the U.S. Forest Service. At last summer's off-highway vehicle listing sessions, thousands asked the Bureau of Land Management to adopt a sensible closed unless designated open policy, similar to Montana state lands. In response, the Bureau of Land Management falsely stated, quote, the BLM does not have the legal authority to create a closed unless designated open policy, unquote. Listen closely. The courts do not agree. This case originated on the Manistee National Forest clearly shows that the Bureau of Land Management can have a closed unless designated open policy. And we want to thank John Gatchell of the Montana Wilderness Association for that news. Thank you very much. Oh, let's see here. And in other roadless area news, Bush delays Forest Road and logging ban, USDA to review Clinton-era roadless rule. From the Associated Press, the Bush administration said Monday that a ban on road building and most logging in a third of the country's national forest has been delayed for 2 months so that it can be reviewed by the new administration. And if you read between the lines, like Uncle Dennis does, that means they want to try and kill it if they can. The plan, which then-President Clinton announced January 4th, has been attacked by Republican lawmakers from western states and by energy, timber, and mining industries. The delay is in line with an order President Bush made on taking office last month to halt or slow down a series of regulations and rules that the Clinton administration issued in its final days. The forest restrictions were published in the Federal Register before Bush took office, so he can't block or alter them without going through a new rulemaking process. Monday's action changes the plan's effective date from March 13th to May 12th. The plan is being reviewed by the Agriculture Department, which oversees the U.S. Forest Service. Under the plan, dubbed the Roadless Proposal, the Forest Service will ban road building on 58.5 million acres of federal forest where no roads currently exist, and that includes 9.5 million acres in the Tongass National Forest in Alaska. Regulations would also limit future logging in those areas to activities that restore and preserve the forest, although commercial timber contracts already in the government pipeline will be allowed to go through. The chairman of the House Resources Committee, Representative Jim Hansen, a Republican from Utah, has appealed to Bush to work with Congress on rolling back the plan. Hansen called the logging restrictions one of the most egregious abuses by the Clinton administration. Several senators who are opposed to the plan have said that they will either invoke 1996 law that allows Congress to rescind a regulation within 60 days. The Clinton administration said the impact on the timber industry would be minimal because there is relatively little logging in the roadless areas, even though they account for 31% of all federal forests. Millions of Americans commented on the plan. That's 1.7 million Americans commented on the plan, with almost 80% of them approving the changes. And the amount of timber production is 0.12% of the United States timber production. Let's see here, from Billings, Montana, another road story. A coalition of environmental groups had filed court papers opposing a landowner's lawsuit to require almost 9 miles of new road construction to reach a private parcel deep within Montana's Absaroka Beartooth Wilderness area. Building a road into the Absaroka Beartooth Wilderness is like throwing a brick through a church window. It's an assault on one of Montana's treasures, and we will oppose it, said Earth Justice Legal Defense Attorney Tim Presso, who is representing conservationists in the case. The lawsuit was filed by the Absaroka Trust, a trust established by Livingston resident James Severs. The trust seeks to overturn a decision by the U.S. Forest Service denying the trust's request to build a 20-foot-wide gravel road through the 900,000-acre Absaroka Beartooth Wilderness to access a 120-acre private inholding. Anyway, that's it for news. To get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email, our address, cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef, C-R-U-Z-E-F, at cruzio, C-R-U-Z-I-O.com. Or you can send letters to Earth First Radio, our address, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That address again, Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And please do send all your announcements 3 weeks in advance. If you want more in-depth news or information about the Earth First Movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address currently is P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. It'll be changing soon, but for the time being, it's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. You can listen to Earth First Radio live every Thursday night at 8 p.m. on your computer. Go to the website, www.microradio.net/FRSC, and tune in. And of course, that also is currently at 9:30 on Tuesday mornings for a rebroadcast. Once again, that live streaming is at www.microradio.net/FRSC. There's lots of great shows on Free Radio Santa Cruz, so tune in anytime. If you're looking to listen at some other time, you can go to our archive site. That's www.radioforall.net, www.radio4all.net, And Earth First Radio is carried on a number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Please ask your local station to broadcast Earth First Radio if it doesn't currently. Earth First is free to non-commercial and free speech radio stations. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis, with a cold, but I'm still Uncle Dennis. Thank you for listening to Earth First Radio, and now we're going to listen to a little music from Robert Hoyt off his new CD, Mind's Eye. I think I picked out a little tree here called Swamp.
So you people think you've been in some mighty wild places, in high mountain tops and in wide open spaces. I don't care where you choose to romp, but you ain't seen nothing till you've been in the swamp. Where the black bear frolics and the barred owl talks. Some people say that the panther still walks. Watch out for your kids, watch out for your dog. Don't step there, that ain't no log. Swamp, swamp, the swamp is alive. Swamp, will you survive? Listen to the frogs and listen to your fear. It says a city-living human ain't got no business here. Cottonmouth moccasin come swimming by you. The stories I've heard, well, I hope they aren't true. To die in the swamp ain't no crime. The mosquitoes haul you off and drop them blood at a time. Swamp, swamp, the swamp is alive. Swamp, swamp, we survive. If you think you're gonna live, then you know you're gonna die. Cause the wild pig is staring you right straight in the eye. For mercy you beg, cause there's a snake up in the trees, big around as your leg.